Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
We are joined today by Megan Hatchberry from Woodland Regional High School from Region 16, and most notably, a 2020 State Teacher of the Year. And we are so happy to have you here today because we need to break down remote teaching and remote learning. Because what we are hearing out there is not remotely true. And so I think some of the conversation is about helping people understand what it is like to be a remote instructor. What is the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, the things we want to keep and things we definitely don't. So Megan, talk to us about what your experience was like remote teaching and pandemic stuff.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. Remote teaching. So for 3.5 months, from March through June of 2020, we were all fully remote. And I think, you know, we've said it before, but it's worth saying again that the teachers and educators across the state and across the country did remarkable things in very, very little time with very little ability, to plan ahead. You know, we've heard that analogy, you know, building the plane as we were flying it.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to say that when we left school March 13th of 2020, mm-hmm. I had never had a Google Hangout, a Google Meet. Mm-hmm. I had to go home and practice.
Oh, absolutely.
No idea what I was doing.
Yeah. And I think we were all practicing over those, 4 months, mm-hmm. So many things were experimental. You know, we relied on students. I know I certainly did as a high school teacher. I relied on students to help me figure out technology or to problem mm-hmm. solve or to come up with ideas about what would make this more engaging, what would make this more helpful or more beneficial. And so I really relied heavily on my students, who were incredible, so resilient and wonderful. The following year, we started back hybrid. We were hybrid pretty much the entire year.
What did hybrid mean?
Hybrid meant that we had about 50% of the students, this is in the high school, 50% of the students in the building at one time, and then 50% of the students were learning from home simultaneously. Okay. So I was teaching, I was dual teaching the students in front of me while also having my laptop open and having, we're fortunate enough to have great technology in Region 16. So I had a big smart board, where students, I could see the students, their peers could see them, and they could hear it and be a part of the class. So that lasted the whole year in some shape or form. Yeah. By April, we were 75% of students back in the building, but we physically couldn't fit 100% of our high school students in the building with social distancing. So that whole year, again, hybrid learning is not the same as full remote. In fact, it's more challenging when you're asking a teacher to be responsible for the learning and the safety and the well-being of students physically in front of you, but also making sure that you are engaging and connecting with the students who are home. One of the things I think I worked so hard at that was such, it was always on the forefront of my mind, is how do I try to make the students at home feel like they are with the students in the class, and to never treat them as two separate entities, but to find ways for them to communicate with each other, to collaborate with one another. And that is so important, but so hard.
Now, did your kids, because I had a challenge with my students where they didn't turn their cameras on, and we're not allowed to, require them mm-hmm. to. Which then created an additional kind of engagement barrier, right?
Yes.
I didn't know if they were watching TikTok videos, playing video games, or mm-hmm. doing my lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely had that situation. We tried to set an expectation and to mm-hmm. really speak to the students about how beneficial it would be. I do think there were legitimate reasons for a number of our students for not turning on those cameras, whether it's because they were taking care of younger siblings, whether it's because of the condition of their home, a variety of other things. But yeah, we couldn't require them to do that. Right. And there were definitely students who have admitted it fully that all those cameras were off, or even sometimes while the cameras were on, they were disengaged.
And I think what I'm hearing you saying is that this dual instruction model, mm-hmm. when you have kids in person and at home at the same time, is really just
ineffective. It hurts students. It hurts our ability as educators to do our best work and to really give everybody the care that we need. I know you're both high school teachers, so it looks a little bit different, mm-hmm. but I'm an elementary school teacher yeah. who also had, you know, students live streaming into the classroom while I was teaching, and it created a number of issues for both the kids in class and for that those students at home. And so I think when we look at remote, we can say that there's absolutely one version of this that is yeah. totally, there's no place for it in our schools, which is that dual instruction model. But there are options of remote instruction that are beneficial. So I think one of the things we could do is talk a little bit about what does a good remote system or learning model look like? What would we use it for? How could it be used for our students? Because we could talk all day about the problems, right? But I think mm-hmm. what we did learn is that there were times when remote instruction was successful.
Yes, definitely.
So what would that look like?
So I think first and foremost that if you're going to be offering a remote learning plan, that remote learning plan has to just be for remote students, right? There's no in-person teaching going on. And I think that the students who are home learning remotely need to have a teacher who is dedicated to doing that. So it's not even so much that you do it on a prep period or you do it during one block of the day and one block of yours is remote, but that is a medium and a practice that you are dedicated to as a teacher.
Because to your point, it's a skill set that you develop.
It is absolutely a skill set.
You know, we know from having done this that it doesn't, you just don't pick up and put your lesson online.
No.
I mean, that's the biggest misunderstanding mm-hmm. is that, and honestly, I saw teachers who really blossomed in remote. It was interesting to see this dynamic that they were good teachers, but they became amazing online when they really dedicated to that practice.
Yeah.
And vice versa. People who were amazing and engaging, exciting in person, who just didn't translate into technology. So I think it's important to recognize it is a skill set to develop.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the pandemic has forced people to sort of notice those things, you mm-hmm. know, and there should be opportunities for teachers who realize they do have a skill set or want to develop that skill set further to do that
right.
and have an opportunity. But we shouldn't be asking our classroom teachers to then also be teaching students who are electing to go remote for whatever reason that may be. That being said, and I have experience teaching students using online platforms in the past, prior to COVID. For 8 years, I was a teacher at our Region 16's alternative education program. And at that time, during those years, I worked with two different platforms. Those platforms alone with the kid was never going to teach them anything.
Correct.
The key, I was working with a small group of students, and I was helping to facilitate this online platform. This idea, unless you have a student who is perhaps deeply intrinsically motivated, or they are taking an online course for some type of an independent study mm-hmm. or a senior project, and they're using some type of online learning platform, that is an area where we've seen success. But
right.
when we just give kids an online tool and expect them to learn, that doesn't work.
No.
Can they get through it? They can. Have they learned anything? Has there been quality education that has happened for them? Has this been a meaningful learning experience? By and large, no. And so I think, to your point, if we're going to look at creating a model that is successful, we need to really talk about small class sizes. We need to really provide training and opportunities for our teachers to figure out how to make that technology engaging. I heard from a lot of students who were experiencing college for the first year or the mm-hmm. second year during COVID, where, you know, and no disrespect to my collegial colleagues there, but like a lot of times college classes were just putting a syllabus online, just
right.
putting readings online. That is not how it works in K-12 education.
Right.
You cannot just put something online and expect a kid to figure it out.
It's so funny you say that. The second year of the pandemic, I was teaching at a community college in addition to teaching in high school. And I was the anomaly in the mm-hmm. online instructors mm-hmm. because I would have these sessions and I would do interactive instruction. And my students were like, what do you mean? I said, well, from 7 to 9, we're going to do math together. And I was the anomaly in the college environment, but I just didn't know how you learned math without actually doing math with an adult. So I didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
I think it really has shown us that there are practices that we need to be thoughtful about.
We talk so much about the detriments that happened now, and we hear all this discussion about learning loss, and we hear, you know, all of these really upsetting, scary statistics about students' mental health issues. And so to look now at remote learning as a panacea that's going to kind of solve our equity issues is really, I think, a dangerous way of thinking. Can it provide equitable opportunities for families and for students who are in a position to get the most out of it? It can, but I think that it can also exacerbate equity issues. It
so has to drill down on that.
Yeah.
I think one of the myths, when we talk about what's not remotely true, this question about equity is critical, because equity is so important to us. It's something that we have an interest in pursuing, things that improve the opportunities for our students. So let's drill down a little bit on why this may not really solve mm-hmm. our equity concerns.
I think that when we think about, again, this idea, people who are making the decisions have not experienced it in practice, that it's this idea that if you just open up an opportunity, people can walk through it and get the most out of it. And that really isn't how it happens. The problem that we saw with remote learning was students becoming disengaged and losing that critical relationship that they had with their classroom teachers, with their school counselors, with their advisors, with other people in the school building who were there to check in on them, you know,
right.
just to like humanize them and to humanize the educational experience. And it's not that there aren't great teachers who can do that online, but when that's the only option that you have, you really run the risk of putting kids in jeopardy. You have to ask, what are you doing? Why are we doing it? And who is going to be sort of best served by this? And I am, you know, I'm concerned thinking about kind of moving too quickly in trying to just offer this up as a remedy that's going to sort of solve all of these problems that we have. We're coming out of a period where we thought and we argued that remote learning created these problems.
Right.
And so now we're creating an opportunity to fix those problems with the same tool. It doesn't make full sense to me right now.
Well, and I think when we think statewide, you know, mm-hmm. having state options are really important for education.
Sure. Absolutely.
But I think, and Kate, you've said this before, right? The further away you get from the base of where that student is,
yeah.
the further away you are from the care that you can
yeah.
get. Because when it's a student from my district that I'm connected to, where there's accountability from my board of ed or the parents or whoever, and there's a chain where people know, this is the person that cares about me. These are the people that I can go to for help. When we make a broad-based program that's kind of disconnected or that's paid for through some sort of alternative service or a publishing company,
right.
it really does mm-hmm. take away from the care and the individualized care that we give students. And, you know, so I think that we really have to be cautious about how we plan for this. What students would benefit from remote instruction? What does that look like? And what
right.
is our purpose behind it? Because if it's just to solve a problem and this seems like a good answer, that's probably not the right way to go about it, right?
yeah, yeah.
It needs to be
yeah.
a lot more strategic than that.
Well, and Megan, you and I share having taught in an alternative education program.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I get really anxious about this topic because how much attention and love and genuine care goes into working with kids in an alternative education program.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Those were some of my favorite teaching experiences, but they were also some of the hardest teaching experiences I've had. And I worry because I got a lot out of those experiences as an educator, and the students got a lot out of them. I am worried that remote is going to get kind of plugged in for those kids, because
mm-hmm.
these are kids who, they are what they are. They don't love school, right? So they act out. They find 101 ways to be a nudge to their teachers.
Or more.
Yeah, they're
nudge,
very
you know?
Creative.
Yes.
I often said that those were some of the smartest kids I ever taught.
Creative critical thinkers. Absolutely.
No question. And my concern is that so much of what we were able to do with those kids were the result of being in person.
Yes.
And that if they get shifted into a remote situation because it's sort of the new last effort, right? I find that to be like a devastating concept.
So the idea that schools could turn to trying to solve behavioral issues by putting kids into a remote learning situation.
Right.
Yeah.
This notion that if you are, you know, rule averse,
mm-hmm.
you know, you like to challenge the authority,
mm-hmm.
That somehow this will be a better fit, that will, because it will be easier, right? It will be easier for school districts to say, gee, you know, Megan, I think remote might be an excellent opportunity for you. The flexibility might suit your personality. And maybe I'm a really good pitch man and I can make that sound good to you, but I'm genuinely concerned because those are the kids that really respond to the educator in the classroom.
To the relationship, yeah. The building of the relationship. So if you're going to have a kid who's school averse, rule averse, reluctant reader, whatever it happens to be, and then you're going to ask them to go home and just turn on their computer and engage right. and learn every day. You know,
now, these are the things that educators, I start laughing because I'm like, that just sounds dumb when we say it. It does not sound like a good idea.
But if you are not in education and you're not on the ground doing that every day and you don't see how important those moments are, what might seem on the outside to be like a superficial, inconsequential, you know, pass by in the hallway, check in with a kid, a high five, a fist bump, those are sometimes the things that keep kids in school.
Right.
We haven't even talked about, you know, with remote learning opportunities, what happens to extracurriculars? You know, what happens to sports? What happens to socialization, yeah. you know, opportunities? And there are certainly families who can ensure and provide students with those necessary social and emotional supports and socialization. But that is not the case for everyone.
Right.
And so, again, I worry that it's going to become something that can be used to try to solve a problem, but it's not in the best interest of our children, and it's not in the best interest of their learning.
I sit on the Remote Learning Commission, and I constantly go back to the question, what problem are we trying to solve?
Are there teachers on that commission?
There is just myself and mm-hmm. and one other teacher, and we are banging the drum. I will say that we are joined in the chorus by, you know, Fran over at CAPS. Mm-hmm. She yeah. brings some experience from Bridgeport that makes her very, very cautious. So I think she's been another cautious voice.
Right.
I think the question still remains as to what is the right framework. And mm-hmm. my concern is that we seem to be rushing to answer that question right. and trying to build off of what other states have done. I appreciate that. But one of the things that I took away from the commission is that what other states are doing really don't sound all that good to me.
I haven't seen, yeah, I was reading some articles about it, and it doesn't look like we have something that shows really strong outcomes.
Correct.
You know, so what are we trying to model?
Some of those programs embrace some of those concepts, and what I think we want to know are the truths about remote instruction. And we can start with, there is a space for it, right? There is a space for remote instruction, but it takes time, it takes planning, mindful planning, and that's connected to the communities that you're working with. There's no space for dual instruction, absolutely zero. Correct. It is not effective okay. in any model. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we need to have educators in the spaces where we're planning this work, the ones who have mm-hmm. done it and who Correct. Know really what's working and what's not working, and, you know, how to be creative and innovative in the sense of this could be some great learning for some very specific populations of students and families.
With the right supports, I couldn't agree more.
So I think that's where we leave this, which is it's going to take time. It's not going to be something that we should just throw together quickly because we need an answer.
We don't have to build the plane as we're flying it anymore.
Right? Exactly.
We had Correct. To do that in that acute time period. You know, we had to. But we don't have to do that now. And it would be really, really just a terrible misstep to move forward too quickly without having those insights and those voices at the table. Yeah.
So, Megan, I want to say thank you for joining us with this. I know it's always fly by, and I feel like we could talk again.
So much more.
So
about.
Much more.
Yes.
But what I do hear is that Megan is available to participate in a remote learning work group. So we'll just write that down. Jocelyn, make sure you catch that.
I got that.
You got that?
Yep.
Let me see the transcript here. What is that?
You said it. I swear. It was there.
It was in there somewhere.
It was in there somewhere. But we appreciate you in joining us with this. We hope that as this conversation continues, mm-hmm. that all the things that we're capturing here is the direction we go, that we're thoughtful, we're intentional, we're practical.
Intentional,
yes. Very important. And that we really allow the educators who have had to live this life to have a strong voice in what sort of the projection of the future is. And I think my message to legislators is probably the same as all of yours. No need to rush.
This except for a prohibition on dual instruction.
Yeah, except for
that, we can yesterday. Rush that right now.
Yes.
That could, yeah.
All right, so P.S. Let's rush to that. So thank you again, Megan. And
thank you for having me. Thank you for all the work that you guys are doing, leading the way in these efforts. It's just so critical. So thank you.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word because we are
stronger together.